بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا وعظيمنا وحبيب قلوبنا وشفيع نفوسنا أبي القاسم محمد، اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد، وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين وأصحابه الغر الميامين. الحمد لله الذي جعلنا من المتمسكين بولاية سيدي ومولاي علي بن أبي طالب، اللهم صل على محمد. الحمد لله الذي هدانا لهذا، وما كنا لنهتدي لولا أن هدانا الله. أما بعد، قال الإمام الحسين صلوات الله وسلامه عليه: قد بعثت إليكم أخي وابن عمي وثقتي من أهل بيتي مسلم ابن عقيل. The first of our salawat in honor of Rasulullah Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam. The second in honor of Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali ibn Abi Talib. The third with your loudest voices, in honor of the Imam of our time, Imam Sahib al-Asr wa al-Zaman. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Respected scholars, brothers and sisters, salamu alaykum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh. Muslim ibn Aqil was born in the third year after Hijrah and died in the 60th year after Hijrah at the age of 57. A man from whose life many lessons may be learnt and many examples may be derived, and a man who was viewed as being the embodiment of bravery, trustworthiness, truthfulness, as well as valor in the religion of Islam. Unfortunately, the biography of Muslim ibn Aqil is a biography which has very much been understudied and undervalued. Many people, when you ask them the question, what do you know about the life of Muslim ibn Aqil, they only know about a few days in his life when he was killed in the land of Kufa. Whereas a man who's lived 57 years in this earth is a man who would have provided us with many more lessons than simply the lessons he provided for us when he was executed. If you were to ask many people to name you the wife of Muslim bin Aqil, or the name of his children, or what he was known for at a young age in the battle of Fahnasa in Turkey, or his position with Amir al-Mu'mineen, you'll find that many have not studied or dissected the life of this great man in depth. And it is sad that for many years we have heard lectures on Muslim bin Aqil which have only focused on his death, but nothing else in his life. You'll hardly find a single analysis in Islamic history on the whole biography of Muslim ibn Aqil from the day he was born until the day he died. And this is something sad because of the fact that no family gave martyrs on the 10th of Muharram like the family of Aqil. If you were to count the martyrs on the 10th of Muharram from the side of Abi Abdullah, you will find that the most martyrs on the 10th of Muharram were from the family of Aqil. You found, for example, the grandsons of Aqil, the sons of Aqil, were all represented on the 10th of Muharram. Therefore, this is a family that requires a greater acknowledgement in our life. When we say a greater acknowledgement, it means that we need to dissect Muslims' life in depth to ask ourselves, how much of Muslims' life have we applied into our own lives today? As in, have we truly honored the life of Muslim ibn Aqil? Or is it that we come every year, maybe in the month of Dhul Hijjah, for example, or Dhul Qa'dah, or in the month of Muharram, remember the way he died and move on? Because there are few men in Islamic history who have had as much praise lavished upon them like Muslim ibn Aqil. As in, this man is known as Safir al-Hussein. He is known as Thiqat al-Islam. A man who Rasulullah praised, Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen praised, Imam al-Hassan praised, and likewise Aba Abdullah gave him the ultimate praise in giving him the mission that he gave him. Therefore tonight I'd like to dissect Muslim ibn Aqil's life from the day he was born until the day he died, in order that we are able to give back towards this man who sacrificed his life before the 10th of Muharram. And I'd like to dissect this by looking at the stages of his life, from his days in Medina to his days in Kufa and ultimately to his death. As we said, he is titled Muslim ibn Aqil. As we could tell from his title, his father Aqil was of course one of the sons of Abu Talib. Abu Talib had four sons and two daughters. His eldest son was Talib, hence Abu Talib, then Aqil, then Ja'far, then Ali. And he had two daughters, one was called Jumana and the other was called Fakhita. Between these sons there was a 10-year age gap. So Talib was the eldest, then 10 years later Aqil, 10 years later Ja'far, and then 10 years later the youngest of them, Ali. And you find that each of these had a different attribute. Ja'far ibn Abu Talib, who I'll examine his biography in a few nights, was known for his generosity. You find, for example, someone like whom? You find, for example, someone like Aqil, or someone like Talib. Talib was known for his honor. You find Ali was known for all the attributes possible in a human being. Aqil ibn Abu Talib, what was he known for? Aqil ibn Abu Talib was known for his knowledge of the genealogies. Meaning what? Meaning that Aqil ibn Abu Talib knew about the ancestry of any personality who you gave him the name of. So for example, what they used to say in Masjid al-Nabawi in Medina, may Allah bless all of you to visit Masjid al-Nabi. In Masjid al-Nabawi in Medina, what you used to do is you used to sit inside the mosque. When you sat inside the mosque, you'd lay out a prayer mat in front of you. When you lay out this prayer mat, this indicates that you had your own profession in the mosque of the Prophet. When you had your own profession, you would come to a person, for example, who's laid out a prayer mat. That person would be skilled in medicine. You'd come and sit on his prayer mat, and it would be like a GP surgery. You'd go, for example, to someone else who's sitting down. He was very skilled in the art of farming and agriculture. You'd sit on his prayer mat, and he'd answer your questions. With Aqil ibn Abu Talib, he would lay out his prayer mat, and that would be an indication that anyone who wants to ask me about the genealogies of any family in Arabia, come towards me and ask me. In the Arabic language, they call it knowledge of the Ansab. You know, there are certain books in Islamic history which refer to genealogies. As in, those of you who've studied the books of Islamic literature, if you go to, for example, if you go to books like Al-Isti'ab, Tabaqat Al-Kubra, if you go to Ansab Al-Ashraf of Al-Baladhari, these are books which have a focus on the genealogies of the Arabs. Until today, people in the Arabian Peninsula pride themselves on their family trees. They'll want to tell you about their family tree and where it returns to. Aqil would sit in the mosque of the Prophet. People would come to him and they'd ask him, can you tell us about this family? Why would they ask about the families? Well, in life, you ask about families for a couple of important reasons. Either you want to start a business with somebody, so you ask about their family history. Because I don't want to open a business with someone whose father's corrupt and whose grandfather's a thief and whose great-grandfather destroyed a country. As in, the business will not be productive. Likewise, they would ask him in relation to marriage. As in, you want to marry someone. Naturally, there are certain attributes you look for. So they would ask him about marriage. And when they'd ask him, they'd say to him, for example, we're looking for a girl, or we're looking for a woman who's known for her patience, who's known for her dedication. Can you tell us a family who have got ancestors in this way? So people would come to Aqil, they'd sit. And that's where the famous story of Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen comes from. As an Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen, Aqil helped him in two marriages. Firstly, he helped him with his marriage to, or Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen was helped with the marriage to Fatima, because when Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen got engaged to Fatima al-Zahra, he was waiting for the announcement to be made for the wedding. Aqil saw him one day, said to him, "What's wrong with you? Why are you waiting?" He said, "I'm shy to ask Rasulullah about the wedding day." Aqil said to him, "Stop being shy and come with me. I'll go and ask him for you." You find on the one hand he helped him there, and on the other hand, when the Lady of Light died, he was looking for a lady from whose line there were valiant warriors. So when Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen came to Aqil in the mosque of the Prophet, he sat next to him. He said to him, "Aqil, I'm looking for a lady from whose line there are valiant warriors, the bravest of soldiers." Aqil looked at Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen and he said to him, "Give me a month and I'll give you the answer." When Imam Ali asks Aqil about marriage, Ali ibn Abi Talib does not have knowledge about who is the best of women in Arabia. As in, we believe Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen is the most knowledgeable of men in his time. No, rather, Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen was saying every member of the community has an important role in the community. Aqil may be in matchmaking, that's an important role. This person's in agriculture, that's an important role. That's why I always say in a mosque, the most important person in an event is not the speaker. The most important person in an event is the caretaker of the mosque, those who stand in the car park, those who serve the food. They're just as important as the speaker of the event. Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen told Aqil, Aqil said to him, "Come back to me in a month." When he came back in a month, he said to him, "I have found you a lady." He said, "What's her name?" He said, "Fatima bint Hizam al-Kilabiyya." He said, "Who is this lady?" He said, "Her ancestors are the bravest warriors in Arabia." He said, "Who are they?" He said to him, "Haven't you heard of her ancestors? People like Amr bin Sa'sa'a." He said, "I know Amr bin Sa'sa'a, the great warrior." And he began to name him one name after another. Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen knew that these ancestors are the greatest of warriors. He decided to marry her. Her name was Fatima. Later, of course, her name was changed to what? Umm al-Baneen. Therefore, what do you find? Aqil, therefore, had this ability. The genealogy and the ancestors, people would come towards him and people would learn from him. But still, there's a question mark about Aqil sometimes raised in our communities. Because sometimes you find people asking the question about the incident when Aqil tells Imam Ali, "Give me money from the treasury." As in, many of us grew up hearing this incident, that when Aqil came to Imam Ali, he said to him, "You're the Khalifa, you're my brother, why don't you give me some money from the treasury?" And Imam Ali is narrated to have taken Aqil's hand and put it near the fire. Aqil moves his hand. Imam Ali says to him, "Why'd you move your hand?" He says, "Because the fire is going to burn me." To which, of course, Imam Ali replies, "If you're scared of that fire, how about the fire of the Day of Judgment?" Sometimes people ask the question, if Aqil is religious, how could he ask for something like this? You see, when you look at these five fingers, not all of them are the same. You are trying to compare a man to Ali ibn Abi Talib. That is not fair. Ali ibn Abi Talib is a barometer which is very difficult to reach. As in, there were great personalities in history who themselves said that this man is the pinnacle as an example on this earth. When you look at Aqil, Aqil is just like me and you as a human being, in the sense that Aqil is a man who also wants answers about the meaning of this world, is a man who's also evolving in his consciousness of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Aqil, there are narrations, without a doubt, that when Imam Ali told Aqil, "I can't give you from the treasury." Yes, there is money from the treasury. I have some of the money from the treasury. You find that Muawiyah may have some of the money from the treasury, because remember, Muawiyah did not give bay'ah to Ali ibn Abi Talib. Therefore, he's taken some of the treasure for himself. Aqil therefore went to Muawiyah, because he felt, if my brother says, "I can't give you," then if Muawiyah has some of the money of the Muslims, let me take it to Muawiyah then. When he went to Muawiyah, Muawiyah found out that Aqil ibn Abu Talib has come to Sham to take some of the money from the treasury. Muawiyah thought, this is a major coup for me. Aqil ibn Abu Talib has come to me to take money. I'm going to use this as a weapon against his brother to say that the man comes to me for money. When Aqil came towards Muawiyah, Muawiyah was sitting down. Who was next to him? Amr ibn al-As. Amr ibn al-As and Muawiyah were sitting down. Aqil came. When Aqil came, Muawiyah said, "Welcome, O Aqil, the man of the ancestries, the man who knows the genealogies." Aqil said to him, "What is it that you want from me?" He said, "Can I ask you a couple of questions?" He said to him, "Yes, go ahead." He said, "I want to ask you about some of the people in my court. I want to know about their ancestries. Can you tell me about them?" He said, "Yes, very well. Name me the person, I'll tell you his whole ancestry." He said, "Amr ibn al-As next to me, what's his ancestry?" Aqil looked and he said, "Amr ibn al-As, you want to know his ancestry?" He said, "Yes, please tell me his ancestry." He said, "Six different people claimed they were the father of Amr ibn al-As." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, what happened was, Amr ibn al-As used to have regular visitors, different men who used to visit her house regularly. As the famous poet used to say, most houses, the fences are quite high, except the mother of Amr ibn al-As. So you used to have a number of these men who used to come and they used to visit. When these men would come and they'd visit, of course, the lady is then wondering, as in, who is the father of this baby who's now coming? So what they would do is they put six names into a bowl, as you would to find out who your father is, of course. So you put these six names in a bowl, and what happened was, someone picked out from the lottery who it is, and it said, Al-As ibn Wa'il. Therefore, you asked me about Amr ibn al-As. This is how his ancestry comes." Muawiyah smiled. He then said to him, "Well, it's ironic that you say this. Now tell me about my ancestry." To which he replied, "If you ask Arabia about your grandmother's job, you'll know what your ancestry is." Muawiyah, of course, is not someone you can just talk to like that. He's just a sharp. Muawiyah looked at him and he said to him, "Aqil, how's your uncle Abu Lahab? Is he still burning in hell?" Because you know, Aqil's uncle is Abu Lahab, like Rasulullah. It's Aqil's father, Abu Talib's brother. But Aqil replied to him with a devastating reply. He said, "Yes, he's burning in hell next to your auntie, Jamil." Because Muawiyah's father, Abu Sufyan, his sister is Jamil. Jamil is the wife of Abu Lahab. Tabbat yada Abi Lahab wa tab. Ma aghna anhu maluhu wa ma kasab. Sayasla naran dhata lahab. Wa mra'atuhu hammalatal. Hatab fi jidiha hablum asad. So he looked at him and he said to Muawiyah, "My uncle is burning next to your auntie in hell." Then he said a line which I will leave for your own imagination to discuss. He said, "As you know, the rider is always in charge of that which is written." Anyway, so what happens was, on this note, Aqil therefore, what happened with him? Aqil therefore told Muawiyah, "There is no way a man like me takes from a man like you. My brother is the embodiment of justice. I came here thinking I could take from the treasury. Look at your lavish world that you live in, while my brother lives like the rest of his nation." He therefore left. But it's on this note that an important historical issue emerges. What is it? What happens was, a rumor came out about Muslim bin Aqil's birth. That Aqil told Muawiyah, "Muawiyah, you have this slave girl which I like." You see, this is a rumor, a slanderous rumor, which the Umayyads made in history to attack Muslims' origin. They say that Aqil told Muawiyah, "Muawiyah, you have a slave girl I like." Muawiyah said, "Oh, Abu Yazid." That Aqil's title is Abu Yazid. "Oh, Abu Yazid. Which one?" He said, "That one." He said, "That one's very expensive. Why don't you take one of the cheaper slave girls?" So he said to him, no, I want the expensive one." And from there, when he took the expensive one, Muslim ibn Aqil was born from the slave girl of Muawiyah. Firstly, I am surprised Aqil would have the title Abu Yazid. Listen, I don't think Al Muhammad would have wanted to pick the title Abu Yazid of all the names they could have picked. Secondly, Aqil ibn Abu Talib did not need a slave girl from Muawiyah ibn Abu Sufyan. Aqil ibn Abu Talib could marry any lady. He doesn't need one from Muawiyah's palaces. Therefore, who did Aqil marry? Aqil married a lady of Persian origin. A lady of Persian origin by the name of Aliya or Aliya or Aliya. You see, today, if you ask someone, "Why do you name your daughter Aliya?" He says, "You know, the name sounds cool." You ask someone else, "Why do you name your daughter Aliya?" He's like, "Well, Ali in the feminine might sound like Aliya." No. You name your daughter after Muslim's mother. Aqil's wife, that's her name. So when you name your daughter Aliya or Aliya, it's interesting, if you ask many Muslims who've heard Majalis for over 40 years, what's Muslim's mother's name? It's because, unfortunately, the research hasn't been in depth. The research been very shallow in many Majalis for years. We need to research every angle of every personality. You find his mother's name is what? Aliya. This Aliya, originally Persian. Someone asks, why is Aqil marrying outside of his culture? As in, he's from Medina or Mecca. Why doesn't he marry a Meccan? Why doesn't he marry a Medinian? Al-Muhammad wanted to kick out this sort of racism which existed in their society. The family of Bani Hashim or Bani Abu Talib did not want a person to focus on the nation, rather focus on the taqwa of the person they're marrying. You see, Imam al-Hussein, his wife is Persian, not Sayyid. Imam al-Sadiq's wife, North African, non-Sayyid. Imam al-Kadhim's wife, North African, non-Sayyid. Imam al-Rada's wife, North African, non-Sayyid. Imam al-Jawad, North African, non-Sayyid. Imam al-Hadi, North African, non-Sayyid. Imam al-Askari, let's say a Roman princess, non-Sayyid. You know why I mentioned the country and the origin? It's because in our cultures today, when you want to marry someone, they either have to be from the same village, or if you're a Sayyid, you have to marry a Sayyida. Isn't it? You go to certain parts of the Muslim world today, if their son's a Sayyid, he wants to marry a non-Sayyid girl. No. So what do you mean no? They're like, no, a Sayyid can only marry a Sayyida. Excuse me, according to who? Who? The Imams. Which Imam? Which Imam? Imam Sadiq? Or Imam al-Kadhim, or Imam al-Rada, or Imam al-Jawad, or Imam al-Hadi, or Imam al-Askari. None of their wives were Sayyid. So who told you Sayyid has to marry Sayyida? What? Someone came on the minbar and told you this? In your own research, there are times when a person has to use his head. When the Quran says the only difference is taqwa. What differentiates us as nations is taqwa. Your son wants to marry a non-Sayyida. Who are you to say that it has to be in the same bloodline? No, I want to protect the same bloodline. No, don't worry. You don't need to protect the same bloodline. Don't worry. Not you. There are others who will protect it. You stay away from protection. Then someone else says, no, my daughter's a Sayyida. She has to marry a Sayyid. Sayyida Zainab's husband was Sayyid. Abdullah bin Ja'far? No. Or Umm Kulthum's husband was Sayyid? No. So why can't they give their daughters who are Sayyidas to Sayyids? This is the problem when culture overtakes religion. This is the problem. When culture overtakes religion, everyone becomes an Ayatollah. True? Ayatollah we have today, Ayatollah Wikipedia, Ayatollah Google, and you have these Ayatollahs as well. These people who are coming on the minbar with no understanding of these issues, ruining marriages. Do you know how many emails I receive every year? How many emails said, Ammar, I want to marry someone, but my dad's saying he has to be Sayyid. Your dad, what is he? Ayatollah, for him to be talking like this? Has he suddenly become a big scholar? No! The dad thinks he's something. That's the problem, honestly. And as Plato used to say, a wise man has something to say, but a fool has to say something. And there's too many who should really lighten on this issue. Therefore, when he married this Persian lady, he married her and he had three sons from her. He had Ja'far, son of Aqil, and he had Abdurrahman, son of Aqil, and he had who? Muslim ibn Aqil. Muslim ibn Aqil was born in the third year after Hijrah, the same year as Imam al-Hassan, a year older than Imam al-Hussein. That's why they all were best friends. Imam al-Hassan, Muslim, Imam al-Hussein, best friends. They loved each other. You know, all of you, when you're born in the same year, you have a relationship forever. You never forget each other. You're very close to each other. You honor each other. Fatima al-Zahra had Imam al-Hassan, and Aliya had Muslim ibn Aqil. Then Imam al-Hussein was born. You'd find all of them were together. And it was from the day he was born that Rasulullah lavished praise upon him. Imagine, from the time you were born, for Rasulullah to praise you is a huge honor. And Rasulullah praised him in a famous hadith. What does he say? Rasulullah once tells Aqil, Ya Aqil, inni uhibbuka hubbain. Oh Aqil, I love you two loves for two reasons. حبا لك. I love you because of who you are. وحبا لحبي عمي أبي طالب إياك. And I love you because my uncle Abu Talib loved you. This highlights the iman of Abu Talib. That whoever Abu Talib loves, I love. And whoever Abu Talib hates, I hate. Isn't it? يا عقيل إني أحبك حبين حبا لك وحبا لحبي عمي أبي طالب إياك. Now listen to the line. وإن ولدك لمقتول في نصرة ولدي الحسين. And that your son will be killed by giving support to my son Hussein. وتصلي عليه الملائكة المقربون. And the highest of the angels will pray on his janazah. Imagine this line. From the year Aqil is born, Rasulullah is telling, from the year Muslim is born, Rasulullah is telling Aqil, oh Aqil, I love you two loves. There's another hadith where he tells Imam Ali, I love Aqil for two reasons. I love him because who he is, and I love him because my uncle Abu Talib loved him, and he will have a son. وَإِنَّ وَلَدَكَ لَمَقْتُولٌ فِي نُصْرَةِ وَلَدِي الْحُسَيْنِ. Yes, before Karbala. And that your son Aqil will be killed supporting my son Hussein. وَالْمَلَائِكَ الْمُقَرَّبُونَ. You know, Malaika, the angels, for them to pray on you is a great honor. But Malaika الْمُقَرَّبُونَ, many of you have read in Ziyara or Du'as, الْمَلَائِكَ الْمُقَرَّبُونَ are the highest angels of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. It means that the highest angels Rasulullah had already spoken of, they will be praying for Muslim al-Aqil when he dies. And that's why Muslim ibn Aqil, from a very young age, one area and one attribute he was known for, ferocious soldier on the battlefield. You see, sometimes we don't give credit to Muslim ibn Aqil as to what a warrior he was. Muslim ibn Aqil on the battlefield is at the same level as Hassan, Hussein and Abbas. If you put the four of them together on the front line of the battlefield, then forget what will happen. Muslim ibn Aqil at 17 years of age was a commander of the armed forces in Turkey. You see, in the 20th year after Hijrah, the armed forces of the Islamic State had achieved victory in Turkey in an area by the name of the Fahnasa. If you go to Turkey today, the Fahnasa is still in existence there. They had captured that land. He was 17 years of age. But at the age of 17, people had wondered, this warrior is a warrior we have never seen the like of. And once again, who is he but the nephew of Ali ibn Abi Talib? So what do you expect? The nephew of Amir al-Mu'mineen on the battlefield is something no one can come near. 17 years of age, the Muslims had begun to notice that this man, when you see him on the battlefield, his sword skills are unbelievable. And that's why I'll never forget, in the Battle of Jamal, and the Battle of Siffin, and the Battle of Nahrawan, Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen, amongst his most important soldiers was who? Amongst his most important soldiers was Muslim ibn Aqil. In the Battle of Jamal, on the opposition side, in the Battle of Jamal, Aisha, Talha, Zubair, Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen, when he came out in the Battle of Jamal, when he announces, I, Ali ibn Abi Talib, commander of the armed forces. To my right hand side, I have Malik al-Ashtar. To my left hand side, Ammar ibn Yasir. Behind me, Hassan ibn Ali, Hussein ibn Ali, Muslim ibn Aqil. These were those who covered him. Who else covered him? To my right, further distance, Hani ibn Urwa. To my left, Muslim ibn Awsajah. All of the Kufans who you later hear about are all Ali ibn Abi Talib's soldiers in their 30s in the Battle of Jamal. In the Battle of Jamal, imagine that ferocious lineup. That's why Imam al-Hussein is confident later on when he's going towards Kufa, because he knows his dad's ex-soldiers are all still alive. Because at Jamal, who does Imam Ali have? Hani ibn Urwa, Muslim ibn Awsajah, Habib ibn Mudahir, Muslim ibn Aqil, Hassan ibn Ali, Hussein ibn Ali, Malik al-Ashtar, Ammar ibn Yasir. Malik al-Ashtar killed, Ammar killed, Hani alive, Muslim ibn Awsajah alive, Habib ibn Mudahir alive, Muslim ibn Aqil alive. All of them are survivors of war. Go on to the Battle of Safin. Battle of Safin. Imam Ali comes to the front of the battle. I, Ali ibn Abi Talib, commander of the armed forces. Now Muslims promoted. To my right-hand side, Malik al-Ashtar. To my left-hand side, Muslim ibn Aqil. Behind me, Hani ibn Urwa, Habib ibn Madahir, Muslim ibn Awsaja. And who? Hassan ibn Ali, Hussein ibn Ali. In other words, these were known as the most ferocious warriors on the battlefield in their 30s. That's why, you know that famous incident that happens in the Battle of Safin? The man who pulls his trousers down? You know who the man is who pulls his trousers down, Battle of Safin? That involved Muslim bin Aqil. Because Muslim bin Aqil, Muawiyah was sitting with Amr ibn al-As. Muawiyah, when he was sitting with Amr ibn al-As, he said to Amr ibn al-As, who's the Iraqi who fights like that? Because you know, Iraqis tend to be very brave personalities. So he said, who's the Iraqi who fights like that? So the reply was what? The reply was, that person who is fighting, I do not know him. Muawiyah said, you'd think it was Ali ibn Abi Talib in the middle of them, but I can see Ali is over there. Who is that person who is fighting? The reply was, the person fighting, I'll find out. So he said to Amr al-As, he said, listen, instead of constantly telling me I don't know, get up and fight him. He said, what? He said, you get up and fight him. Amr ibn al-As came out, he said, you, I want to fight you one-on-one. Muslim ibn Aqil, you know, he was covering himself with a mask. So he turned around to Imam Amir al-Mu'minin and said, do you allow me? Imam said, no. Take off your clothes slowly. Give me the armor, I'll fight him. Amr ibn al-As, when he looked at Muslim ibn Aqil, he said to him, young man, fight me one-on-one, but ask permission from your Imam. When Imam Ali had got changed and he came out, he asked him, he said, have you asked permission from your Imam to fight me? Imam Ali, of course, can't say, I have asked permission, because Imam is the Imam. So he recited the verse, أُذِنَ لِلَّذِينَ يُقَاتَلُونَ بِأَنَّهُمْ ظُلِمُوا. Permission has been given to the believers to fight because they've been oppressed. So Imam Ali said this to him. Eventually, Imam Ali virtually destroyed Amr ibn al-As, until Amr ibn al-As, in the famous incident, when Imam